Okay, y'all, welcome, welcome, welcome. Listen, this is episode one of season five of the Government Coins podcast. Y'all, I had no idea we would still be rocking this long, but I'm so excited and happy that we are, because the amount of content and the amount and the caliber of people that we get to meet as we continue along this journey, it just goes here, like it just keeps going up. So we have some interviews this year coming out with some more government agencies at the city and county levels, but you know, we are nothing without getting our government contracting experts and contractors and people who've sold their business, this one right here, in this process and coming in and telling you about their experience. So without further ado, Kevin, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. I'm ready to get into it. How you feeling?
I'm great. Let's do it. I'm excited.
All right. Thank you for having me. Absolutely. So our first question, I'm going to go ahead and knock it off. We already have people in the comment section saying, let's go. This is about to be epic. You know, two of the great people in this space sharing knowledge. So one alone, that already tells y'all which direction this conversation is about to go in. And also it highlights Kevin's experience as well as the knowledge in this space and how he's been able to work and help with people. So and work with people and help them. So let's do it. So first question is, Kevin, tell us about yourself and your business.
Yeah, so Kevin Jennings from Miami, Florida. One of the last true Floridians left, you know, meet people in Florida.
Well, as the knowledge in this space and how he's been able to work and help with people.
Uh-oh. So got some feedback. Okay, there we go. Yeah, so born and raised here in South Florida. Went to Florida A&M, shout out the Rattlers. Soon as I got out of school, came back down to Miami and automatically started working and started my entrepreneurial journey straight from there. So straight out of college, I started working for myself, started in real estate. Then when the market crashed in 07, got into government contracting and been just rocking out in government contracting literally ever since 2007, 2008, really haven't changed, just stuck the course with government contracting and rode the roller coaster, the ups, the downs, the goods, the bads. I've seen it all. I've seen the ugly stuff. I've seen the great stuff. And I just continue to keep doing it. I believe in it. And then in 2022, I believed in it so much that I decided I wanted to start helping other people. So 2022 is when I started the Government Cheese. And through the Government Cheese, we are just an educational platform that assists small and minority businesses and even large businesses, to be honest with you, with understanding what government contracting is and how it can benefit their business, how to get into it, how to navigate it. Because like we were talking about offline, like government contracting is not hard. It's just there's not a lot of education. So people sometimes when they don't have education, they don't want to follow through with things because they just don't know what it is. So that's what I felt like I could bring to the table is the education, but then also be able to give the real life experiences.
Yes.
So it's like we can talk about a certain, you know, topic that we can pull from the SBA and we can talk about a topic, but then I can say, okay, now here's an example of how I use that within my life. And here's something, I did a contract like XYZ where I had this. And so that's just what I've been able to do. And a lot of times we've been having a great success because people can, they can resonate with that. Cause when you can throw in a real life example, like, okay, now it makes sense. Whereas a lot of times, like if you were just to read a FAR clause, you would be like, what is that? Yeah, so
no, definitely. I've had a few headaches from reading those FAR clauses and a number of people reaching out asking them questions about it. But one thing you said is that you were one of the last Floridians left. And I just got to let you know that, you know, born and raised, St. Pete's, what are you talking about? Like, come on now.
They're pushing us out of Florida. We had that great migration, like it was probably after the real estate crash, like 09, 2010, where like all the Floridians moved to Georgia. And then it was like, we took over, like Florida took over Georgia in like 2010. And then during COVID, all the New Yorkers and Californians moved down to Florida. So it's not a lot of us Floridians left. So we try to hold it down for the state.
No, definitely. Especially in this South Florida area. Like it's one of those spaces. Like the more north you get, you know, yeah. It's the standard, you know, old town Florida, but yeah, definitely. Okay, so I actually wrote down two questions. I got to write down questions as I go to. So yeah. I would love to hear more about your experience getting into the government contracting space, because like you say, a lot of people just have no idea about the industry or the opportunity to scale and grow their business in that direction. So how did you find out about government contracting? And then, you know, what was your initial process of getting started in this space?
Yeah, most definitely. So I found out about government contracting through my dad. So my dad was, and he was like one of the first wave of small minority businesses back in the 80s. So my dad, he got into government contracting and he started his business in 85, right? So he was in that first wave of the 8A program. That's back here in Miami when they still had the Black-owned business certificates and all that. So he was in that original wave of minority government contractors. So I kind of grew up knowing about it. Problem with, like, I tell people, they're like, oh, that must have been dope. Like, your dad was in government contracting. I'm like, yeah, but he was one of the first ones. So he did great, but he also did bad because he was the one that the government used as like the examples, like, okay, this program doesn't work, so we have to change that. So as great as it was also tough because his whole generation of government contractors, they were the ones that had to fail so our generation could succeed. So that's how I originally learned about government contracting, was because he had been doing it for years and he has a military background. So that's how he got into it. And then in 2008, when I lost everything in the real estate market crash, he was the one that was like, you should really look at starting to do stuff for the government because they're not going nowhere. And so then I was like, okay, you got a point. And then that's when I really started learning more about it and then taking my resources and my skill set and implementing it into government contracting. Because he could only talk about what he knew, which was airplanes. He was an aircraft mechanic in the Air Force. He worked for Eastern Airlines in the early 80s. And then his first government contracting business was an aircraft maintenance shop over at Opa-locka Airport. So he was in government contracting, but all he knew was airplane parts. Like, so he didn't really do a lot of government contract. He just did aircraft stuff.
And see, I love that you say that because that's one of those conversations of where, like, people will say, if someone in, you know, like you were saying, the great example, if your dad did aircraft maintenance, and then now you're trying to learn about the other side of it, which is the development component of it, it's two completely different worlds. So there will always be like a learning gap depending on the industry that you're in. However, having that initial, you know, knowledge or background of the programs and the policies, that stuff don't change. But just navigating it for industry, I'm interested to hear how you were able to do that. And if any, were there some resources that provided you some support in that process?
Yeah, so a lot of resources. I tell people it was a different time because I started in 2009. So the internet wasn't what it is today. YouTube University did not exist. You couldn't Google stuff and get answers. So government contracting at that time was old school. Like, I had to go down on Biscayne Boulevard to the SBA office. I had to set up a meeting with SCORE. I had to sit with them. And then PTAX didn't exist at the time. It was literally SBA and SCORE was all you had. There were some small community-based organizations that helped with government contracting, but not to the extent that we have now. So it was just a different time. I had to do everything hand-to-hand. I had to really go out there. I had to go to the meetings. I had to go to the conferences. And that's kind of how I learned, was just out there in the field doing it every day. Because like I said, the resources weren't there because we didn't have the internet. So you had to go out there and physically do it, which was great because it allowed me to meet people. And it was a hindrance in some ways because, like I said, my dad was doing it. So some people looked at me like, oh, that's Keith's son. And I'm like, no, I'm Kevin. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because you got to remember at the time, 2008, I'm 27 years old. So I'm going out here as a 27-year-old, you know, young man trying to pave my way. And I'm going to these meetings and I'm in these meetings with, you know, people in their, you know, 50s and 60s. And then when they see my name, they're like, well, aren't you, where's Keith Jennings? Who are you? And I'm like, well, that's my dad. And they're like, oh, well, why is he not here? And I'm like, no, it's different. I'm on my own accord. So it was a struggle because I had to make a name for myself. I had to pave a way for myself, but I enjoyed it.
I like that you said that. Like, we talk a lot about, well, you know, community wise or just in the entrepreneurship space about being first generation, but being second generation also comes with its own challenges as well. Being, like you said, that creating your own name in this space. So definitely that. But being Keith's son did not hinder this process in one bit. It just was more of, you know, creating your own lane. That's what you would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Okay. And then for the other side of that, we know you've gotten into the government. Oh, wait, can you tell us about your business? The initial business that you sold in this process.
Yeah. So, it's funny. The business I sold was actually my second business. So my first business was focused on interior remodel stuff. So I did a lot of stuff for like Homestead Air Force Base, the VA hospital, Coast Guard bases. And I was primarily a interiors contractor. And the way I got into that was, like I said, I was doing real estate. So I had drywall guys, flooring guys, paint guys. And when the recession hit and the market crashed, I had all of these guys with these skill sets that were looking for work. So then when I started doing the government work, it was an easy transition. So I would take like my kitchen cabinet guy that used to do my, like I said, my kitchen cabinets. And then I would have him making reception desks for doctor's offices. And then like my electrician, learn how to wire stuff in the VA. So I was turning residential contractors into government contracting subs. So that was my original business. And then I got into the underground utility space in 2014. And so the business that I sold was my first underground utility business. And so with that business, what I did was water and wastewater infrastructure rehab for municipalities here in South Florida, primarily Miami-Dade County Water and Sewer. So at the time, Miami-Dade County Water and Sewer was going through what's called a consent decree. And that's essentially when the EPA comes into a city and they take over the water department to get the water up to standards. And what happens is because it's federally funded dollars, it has the same small and minority business spending goals just as a regular federal contract. And there was a lack of small and minority businesses here in South Florida that could self-perform the work. So I got into that industry and I was able to grow my business. And what I tell people, and this is one thing I just want to reiterate, even though you're a small or minority business, you don't want to hang your hat on your certifications. You want to be a business that happens to be small and minority, not a small minority business. And so that's how I was able to sell my company, is because I was able to build a good business that happened to be small. So a bulk of my contracts weren't set aside contracts. They were just contracts that I competed on full and open. And so one of my competitors looked at my book of business and felt like it had value. And so they acquired my company in 2017.
Okay, I like that. Can you repeat that one piece that you hinted on just a little bit?
Because what happens is, especially in the spaces, like even when you go to places like the SBA, the first thing you do when you go to the SBA is they tell you, don't you want to be an 8A? Oh, you're a woman, get your woman on cert. Or you're a vet, get your veteran on cert. They don't lead with learn how to get a contract. They lead with go get a certification and get set aside. That's fine, but the problem is that now you're basing your whole business on your set aside. And one of the ones that we have just most recently seen that affect people is like the 8A. You know, when they just had those issues with the 8A a couple months ago, you had people going crazy because they don't know how to get work. Because all they knew how to do was go around and say, I'm an 8A, what you got for me? And then when they stopped that, everybody's like, well, how am I going to eat now? So that's why I tell people, don't be a small minority business. Be a business that happens to be small and minority. So learn how to do the work. Learn how to get the contracts. Learn how to articulate yourself properly and demonstrate your skill set. And then say, oh, by the way, I have this certification. Can you use it? But don't lead with, I have this certification, what work can you give me? And to me, that's where I see the business different. And that's what enabled me to be able to sell my business.
Love it. I love to see that. I think we had a conversation on here before and we talked about the 8A certification, the 8A program, and realizing that it's a limited amount of time that you have in that program. So if you go in there and you still need to learn how to procure or do business with the government, You're wasting time and money. So
I never forget, it was like I said, when I first got into it, you know, I was able to lean on my dad's resources. He knew a lot of people. So my dad was an 8A, but like I said, he was in the original round of 8As. And so I'll never forget, I went to a conference and I was talking to Beth Myers, who was the small business coordinator from the Army Corps Engineers District in Jacksonville. And I was asking her for advice because, you know, my dad did the aircraft stuff, but I was in the construction and Army Corps does a lot of construction. And I was telling her, I want to get 8A. And she said, why? And I was like, well, they said, she's like, no. She was like, the 8A program is designed to take you from being a small business to a medium business. At the time, my NICE code limit was 33.6 million. She said, baby, until you can make $15 million on your own, don't get into the 8A program because you're going to waste your time. She said, you ain't got no bonding. You ain't got no lines of credit. Like, if you come to me as the Army Corps and you say I'm an 8A and I have the ability to sole source you $30, $40 million, but you ain't done a $200,000 contract, you're wasting your time. And so, like, I've been in the game almost 15 years and I still have yet to get my 8A because I'm not at the level where I feel like I can maximize it. That's why there's so many people that get 8A and they don't maximize the program. And then people don't understand it's a one and done. Once them 9 years is up,
so I'm with you 100% on that. I've been doing this like not nowhere near 15, but around 6 or 7 years, and I'm the same way. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not ready, because I know when I get up in there, I'll maximize it. Definitely agree with that. And first of all, she ran down on you about them numbers, didn't she? She said you can't even do this. You don't have no bunny capacity or nothing.
She kept it real, and I was like, you know what? You're right. Yeah. What am I saying? I'm like, that valid point.
Yeah, you know what? Can't even argue with you. Okay, now let's talk about winning your first contract. What was that process like? I know we do have some questions in the chat. I'm going to run back to those, but I want to ask that one question first, because it was a different time when you got started in this space. So I'm interested to hear how that process worked for you.
Yeah, so originally I got started in the commodity space. So toilet paper, paper towels, hand sanitizer. My first real service-based contract was for $15,000. And it took me about a year of being in the game to get that first real contract. And it was an amazing feeling for me because I was like, wow, this is okay. Now I'm making money. But then I had to replicate the success. And so within the first probably 6 months after that is when I really started doing it. I probably racked up a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of work in the first 6 months. And it was just, I was trying to prove myself. You know, I was on every contract that I got. I was there. I took it serious. I don't want to get too political, but I didn't do like some of these people tell people online and, you know, stay away from it and just give the whole contract to somebody. I didn't know. My first 6 months to a year, I was on every job site. I was there. Even if I had subcontractors, I still was present. I tried to self-perform as much as I could so that I could manage my margins. That's another thing I tell people. Yeah, you can get contracts or anything, but if you really want to make money, get contracts in what you're good at. And so I focused and I, you know, articulated my skill set to the agencies and told them what I was good at. And I tried to get as much work in the fields that I was good at. And that's what really helped me grow.
And it made it a lot easier because you could target, you know, I'm in the class right now. And we just recently redid our customer profiles. And the line that we've been using is being able to go deep instead of wide. So instead of trying to cast a wider net, build a deeper relationship and connection with, you know, this client. How do you narrow that segment down even further? So I love that you say that. And then also another point that you made is subbing out all of the work. Like that in my, if you do that, people don't realize that your reputation travels in this space, right? So if your subcontractor does bad,
that's you. That
don't matter. that's not their business. That's your business. You have to deal with that.
The way I try to tell people, right? So like I'm one of the most non-hater people. Like I'm not a hater, right? So I'm never going to talk down on the things that people say, right? I just try to tell people my experiences. So I've ran my business in utilizing both models. I've worked as a construction management firm and a project management firm, and then I've worked as a general contractor and I've self-performed. Here's what I will tell people. If you're going to work as a true management firm, meaning you are going to manage, right? You can't expect to make a lot of money because you're not doing no work. right? And so that's why when people say, oh, just get a contract and sub it all out and you make X, that's not true. It's not going to happen because you can't, you're not doing anything. Problem with that is that's not a sustainable, scalable business because now you're relying on someone else's capabilities for your business. So what if you're getting all of this work and one day your subcontractor decides, I just don't want to work no more. Now your entire business is gone. And so for me, what I tell my students is you have to be cognizant of that because that's not a long-term goal because you can't scale that. Like you just said, something you said was very true. Cast it, go deep instead of wide. If you look at my FPDS over my entire career, I have maybe 5 or 6 clients over almost a 15-year run. I don't work with every agency. I have 5, and I tell my students, understand who your top 5 are. Stick to your top 5 and go deep within your top 5. Like, and that's where your success is. If you're out here on SAM and on Unison trying to get a contract with every agency, it's not going to work for you because you can't build, you can't foster sustainable relationships. So I agree with you with that comment.
And that fostering that sustainable relationships piece, like the more people see you or engaging with you, it's back to that KNL, people do business with people they know, like, and trust.
Yeah.
Well, KLT, know, like, and trust. So, yeah. You know, I agree with that. I know we're doing a whole bunch of talking. Let me get back to these questions. Actually, I'm going to stop.
That's my bad. Because I be talking. I'm an introvert. Like, I don't like to talk. But then when I do talk, I can't shut up. So I'm sorry. Y'all, forgive me.
So you have to be comfortable. The vibe got to be that. Y'all appreciate that. Y'all hear that? This podcast is what vibes is.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
So I have some questions from guests, and this is Joshua. He's asking, how did you find those contracts with the TSA contracts for the community to provide copy paper, toilet paper?
A lot of the commodity contracts are on Unison. So anything under $25,000 doesn't have to be posted on SAM. The other thing, if you're trying to get into the commodity space, each agency at a local level, for even for federal, like, they have their local vendor list that they go to for their commodities. So, like, I know, for example, like at Homestead Air Force Base, they try to do a lot of their commodities purchases with local companies. So you just have to create a relationship on a local base. And when I say base, I don't mean just like Air Force Base. I mean just like at a local basis. And then you'll be able to get those commodity contracts.
All right, Josh, I hope you got that. I hope you start, go ahead and building that list of those local those local agencies. And then we have Shannon. She's asking about, she's looking for any information about scaling her cargo van company. She says she's also in South Florida. So,
yeah, the transportation space is always going to be big. I tell people the only problem with transportation and government contracting right now is that when the private sector kind of has started to tank and the prices for stuff has gone down, a lot of the larger companies ran to the government first. Right. So, like, even in the cargo and shipping space, FedEx ran to the government 3 years ago and picked up a big GSA schedule. DHL ran over and picked up, you know, work. UPS ran over and picked up work. So the amount of work that you're going to find out there for, like, cargo vans is going to be a little slim. So you may have to work as a subcontractor for a few years. And then when some of those multi-year contracts open back up, you'll be able to jump in as a prime. So I would say, go on GSA, pull up the GSA schedule for shipping, freight, and cargo. There, I think there's 3 different schedules, and you'll be able to see all the people that currently hold those MSAs, and then reach out to them and get on as subcontractors. And then from there, try to see if you can pick up some small prime contracts. But I would start there. And then also, like, I have one of my students just want to, he just was awarded a BPA with the Army Corps for transportation. Like I said, they buy what you sell. It just might not look how you sell it. So for him, for example, he had to pick up a contract for aggregate. And then the aggregate has to be delivered in dump trucks. So he has a dump truck company, but he didn't get a dump truck contract. He got a contract for selling the Army Corps material, but the material has to be delivered in his dump trucks. So you just got to think outside the box. They buy what you sell. They just might not buy it the way you're used to selling it.
I was just going to ask you to repeat that quote. They buy what you sell. They just might not buy it the way you're selling it. I love that. The Nightways in the comments, they say, oh, what's up, good people? What's going on? Great information as well. And then we have one more question. Someone's asking about your approach to cold calling or cold emailing government buyers?
I mean, listen, you can do it, but you got to remember you're dealing with people at the end of the day, right? And so the same way you don't like people cold calling you, imagine if you were going to your job and you were getting cold called, right? So what I would say as an approach, instead of cold calling, is go to events where they want to be, right? So go on the SBA site, they have an events page, figure out where some of these agencies are going to be at. Go to your local chamber of commerce, get with your local minority supplier diversity council, figure out the events that they're going to be a part of. And I would say instead of cold calling or cold emailing, you actually try to make a connection with somebody in person. Because you got to remember, if they're getting 100 emails a day and they still have an actual job to do, so they may not have time to read your capability statement on an email.
Okay, I like that. I want to add one thing. If, like you were saying, going to these events, but if it's at the federal level as well, try to leverage the Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business too, because sometimes they can do what is it called? Like a referral, not a referral, introduction. Yeah. So like that. So somebody gave me some praying hands. Thank you for the advice. So that's what they said. Okay, let's hop back into it.
The Osmo is another big one, though, just to piggyback off what you said. You guys got to remember, like, there's people out there that their job is to make sure that you have success. Like, they get paid every week to help you be successful. Like, that's their job. So, like, make them do their job. They get paid to do it. What you have to understand is that the same way you don't know who they are, they don't know who you are. So if you're going to cold call or make an introduction with somebody, make it with the Office of Small Disadvantaged Business Utilization, because that's their job.
I have a few questions that I have left. Well, I'm gonna try to hop into some of the other ones before we do that. So can you tell me about an experience or a time that one of your greatest challenges in your government contracting space, in the government contracting space, that you had to overcome? What was that, and how did you overcome that?
So the biggest thing that I had to overcome was, like I said in the beginning, I was on every project, right? But I had to understand how to delegate, and I had to understand where my time was best spent. That was very tough for me because I was so passionate about it, because I needed it to work so bad. Like, that's why my program is called the Government Chiefs, because I was on welfare when I started in government contracting. My daughter was born in 2010. And like, she was born on Medicaid, on WIC, like Similac, like all that. Like, I lived on government assistance my first 2 years in government contracting. That's why this program is called Government Cheese. So I was so passionate because it had to work for me. I didn't have another choice, right? But then I had to learn as I grew that I had to pull myself out of working in the business and work on the business. And that was one of the biggest challenges, is because you can use government contracting to scale your business so much. If you don't learn how to work on your business instead of in your business, you'll fail. Because as you start to build those relationships like we talked about, and people want to do business with you, if you are in the business 8 hours a day, they can be calling you with opportunities, sending you things, and you're working in the business, so you miss it. And so that was the biggest challenge for me, was learning how to take myself out of the business.
I agree. I completely agree with that one. So that is that, I guess that poses like a, it keys it up for my next question. And it's kind of similar, but what are some of the key lessons that you learned that you feel like made you a better business person, but also a better government contractor?
Yeah. So working on the business instead of in the business, learning how to hire effectively. Everybody that works in any of my businesses now is more qualified than me. So I am the dumbest person in all of my businesses, purposefully, right? So you have to take the pride out of it, because at the end of the day, the goal and the objective is to provide the government with the best services that we can. So you're going to have to bring in the best people. You're going to have to do everything at the highest quality, because you want to provide the best service to the government. So I had to learn that. And then always be a student. Like, you always need to be learning. You always need to be leveling yourself up. And the more you learn about how this industry works, the better you'll be at it. Because the people that do it at a high level and that are very, very, very successful at it, They know the game inside and out. They know how to do the contracting officer's job better than the contracting officer knows how to do it. And that's what makes the difference. So those are the things that I had to learn.
Got it. Okay, so I wrote these down. It says, always be a student, hire effectively, remove your pride. I think that's a big component of it too, that whole hiding behind the CEO title, right? And then the other thing was delegating and learning how to work on the business instead of always in the business. Okay. All right. So we got those. I hope y'all wrote them down now because I had to reiterate them just for that purpose. And then the other question I have is, what advice would you give to a business who has been trying in the space but still find themselves struggling?
So the big thing is you have to figure out why you're struggling. So in normal business, in B2B and B2C, right? Business to customer. The answer to everything is just sell more, right? That, like, if somebody's like, oh, I'm not making money, just find more customers. Okay, go do more ads on Google. That tactic doesn't work in government contracting. So if you're struggling, you need to understand why you're struggling, right? So I would say if you're submitting proposals and you're losing, are you requesting debriefs, right? So if you're requesting a debrief through the debrief process, you'll be able to understand why your proposal was not selected, right? So learn why you're not having success. Did you not do proper market research? So once again, are you trying to sell to a client that doesn't buy what you sell? Are you trying to sell your product the way that they don't buy it? So that's my question to someone who's not having success is, what are you doing? And do you even understand what you're doing? Because that's the problem too. Is, like I said, if you go to places like these different organizations and try to get assistance, they're going to tell you the easy ways. Go get a certification and shop your certification. Okay, but you don't know how to shop business. You don't know how to provide the service. So if someone's not being successful, like I said, I would have to look at why they're not being successful. But then lastly, I'd have to ask them, what is success? Because everyone's barometer for success is different. So what's successful to you versus successful to me is two different types of success. So you need to understand what your barometer for success is and then set your business up to hit that instead of looking at somebody else and being like, well, I want to be like this person, because that's not realistic.
I like that barometer for success. Yeah, that outline. We don't realize that, but thinking about in the aspect of, you know, your business as well. One thing you mentioned in the beginning of the episode is that when you got started in this space, you leveraged your skill sets and the things that you had already done to get into this space, doing this work with the government. And I think that's oftentimes, you know, even just from a beginning perspective, people are questioning what does the government buy? Like, I get that question so many times, what does the government buy? So from that perspective, it's more of, you know, what advice would you give to someone who's asking that question? What does the government buy?
I would tell them, whatever it is you sell, I guarantee you they buy it. So the first thing you got to do is understand what your NICE code is. Then when you go on the North American Industry Standard website and you're able to pull up your NICE code and you see the description, take some of the keywords out of the description and drop that in and see what other NICE codes pop up that have a similar description. Because you may provide it under this NICE code, but the government may buy it under this NICE code, right? So understand all the codes that correlate to your business. Then just do research. Take those codes, go to usaspending.gov, drop those codes in, sort it by the fiscal year, and see who's buying under those NICE codes. And then from there, start doing your soliciting and trying to figure out the work. But that's the step that people miss, is that they jump in and they just go on sam.gov and try to find something that looks cool. Like, do the research. Like, I guarantee you they buy what you sell. I've yet to have someone come to me and I'm like, wow, they just don't buy that. Like, it hasn't happened. Anything, whether it be barbers and beauticians, you know, the prisons are always buying barber and beautician services, accounting services, different agencies are buying accounting services. Even now, I'm posting a lot and doing a lot with people with social media services. So it's like there's nothing that the government doesn't buy. They just, once again, they may not buy it the way you're used to selling them.
Love that. And then also some trends that you see emerging in the government contracting space in the next 5 to 10 years.
So one of the big ones I just touched on, social media. Social media marketing is a very, very, very big one, because the government, I mean, look at this. We're having this discussion via YouTube, right? So how is this generation communicating with each other through social media? How are they receiving their information through social media? So running regular TV commercials just ain't gonna hit it no more. You know, you think back to, like, I hate to date myself, but like when I was a child, like on Sunday, you go to the grocery store with your mom and there's guys standing out there with military suits on, or you go to the mall on a Friday. Cause you know, back in the day, what were we doing on Friday night? Everybody went to the movie theater, right? That was the thing to do. You'll go to the movie theater and there'll be guys with, you know, army suits on standing there. Hey, what's your plans after high school? All that. Kids don't go to the movies no more. Nobody's going to the mall no more. So how is the army recruiting this next wave of people to come into the army? They got to do it through social media. So that's one of the big ones. The next one is, it's really, really, really big that Miss Adriana Clark put me on, is EV. The electric vehicle industry is about to be massive. Just so you guys think about it now, if you got a Tesla, you got an electric vehicle, you know, if you go to like a Wawa or you go to service stations, they'll have, you know, charging stations for you. Think about this, in 5 years, 5 to 10 years, all vehicles are going to be electric. So not just consumer cars, police cars, fire trucks, ambulances, tow trucks. So where does a police car charge? Is a police car going to charge at Wawa next to your car? No, there's going to be police EV stations. There's going to be fire EV stations. You know, up and down major highways, there's going to be EV stations set up for government vehicles. Okay, so yeah, so somebody installs those, but who maintains them? Like, so the EV sector is about to be crazy. And like I said, I got to credit Miss Adriana Clark from DOT for, she's the one that gave me that game.
Okay. I like that EV push. I have someone in the comments that said, good one, good one. Like, in just overall aspect of the information that's been put out. And then also, federal prisons need peanut butter all the time. So that was a good one too. I like that one.
I tell a lot of my students, sell to the prisons. Why? Because the prisons buy the same thing every 3 months.
That's true. It don't change. Now, we want to get into the nitty-gritty of this thing. So by the time, you know, y'all done got this far in the podcast, y'all already know this man knows exactly what he's talking about. So we want to figure out, how do we engage with you? And do you have any trainings, events, or anything coming up that we can come in and deepen? Remember, going deep, not wide, deepen our relationships, not only just with you, you know, having you as that expert in this space, but also other individuals in the government contracting space. And how can I learn more?
Yeah, so across all social media platforms, see, I got the YouTube up in the background because I was doing some on YouTube. It's Government Cheese. So I put a lot of YouTube videos out, try to do that long format learning. So you got that. Instagram, TikTok, of course, we got stuff there. You can hit me up on our website, thegovernmentcheese.org. So we have a course and community that we offer. The course is kind of that ABC from start to finish, everything you would need to know about government contracting. And then through our community, I feel like is where the true value is. So we have a private Facebook group where we're communicating with each other. We're passing opportunities back and forth to each other. I'm posting opportunities that come to me. We do a lot of joint venturing and teaming through our community. And then with the community, we do group coaching calls. So every other Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, we do a group coaching call. And the one thing with me with my teaching is I'm not like a lot of people. I don't have like a set program. So it's like when you come in, week one is this and week five is this. So what we do is in the Facebook group, on Monday, I say, all right, what do you guys want to talk about this week? And I let the community dictate what we learn about. And then we go in deep on those topics. And then those videos are then uploaded to the course. So no matter when you buy the course, you'll always have 12 months of past calls. So you're able to go back and see live training. So we got that. And then once a quarter, we do in-person boot camps. So I do 3 intro boot camps a year and 1 advanced boot camp. So the intro boot camps are basically for people that are just getting started. 2 days, very intensive. And then the advanced boot camp is for people that have been in for at least 6 months that are looking to take their business to the next level.
Okay, so I've dropped the links to YouTube and your Instagram in the chat. I have to put the website as well. Now, I get a lot of people asking me about consulting. Do you do any consulting work or anything?
So here's my take on consulting. And this is what I'll tell people. I don't mind, like, consulting is not a problem. I personally don't do consulting because I am truly 100% about education. And if I get into consulting with people and helping them in that mat, in that capacity, it's going to stop me from being able to educate others. So what I do is I do have mentorship programs where I work with people on a one-on-one basis for either a 6 or 12 month time frame, but I don't do it based on contract awarding or value. So I don't take percentages of contracts. I'm not paid based on contracts. It's strictly based on you learning as much as you can. The reason why I'm not a fan of the consulting side of things for me personally, there's nothing wrong with consulting business at all, right? But if I am just consulting you and I'm helping you win, then I'm tied to you forever and you're tied to me forever. And I'm not in that business. I'm in the business of educating. So I don't want to get you a contract and then now every 6 months, can you give me another one? Now I got to deal with you for life. I don't want to. I want to teach you. I want you to learn how to do it. And I want to go help somebody else. And then hopefully you learned enough to where you can help somebody else. So.
Love that. Teaching them to fish. Now you have a boot camp coming up.
Yep. In Tampa.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. December 2nd and 3rd, I have an advanced boot camp. So that's my annual advanced one. Like I said, I only do one advanced a year. This is for individuals. It's an invite only. It's for individuals that have been in government contracting for a minimum of 6 months, limited to 30 people. And what I have is I have a couple guest speakers coming with me. So when I say guest speakers, I'm not talking like a conference style where they get up here for 15 minutes and then they try to sell you a product. This is an actual boot camp. So they're coming in and they're speaking for a couple hours. So I have a good friend of mine, Kenny Conwell. He works with businesses to help them leverage their finances. So he's coming and talking high level financing. And, you know, what do you do when you get the first contract? How do you take the profits from that and leverage that to gain more credit to now scale your business up? Like I said, one of my problems was, you know, she asked me, how are you going to take on a $15 million contract when you ain't got no $15 million line of credit? Well, how do you get to that level? There's a method to get to that, right? So that's what we're going to talk about with him. I have Miss Maria Cassidy, who's a great, great wealth of knowledge. She's actually a policy writer for Health and Human Services, but she's coming not on behalf of Health and Human Services. She's coming on behalf of her consulting company. And she's going to help people. And we're going to talk about federal policy. We're going to talk about proposal writing. We're going to talk about debriefs. We're going to talk about protests. And she's going to teach you how to actually do those things. So once you place a bid, what do you need to be working on, right? All of those things that we forget about. And then lastly, I have Megan Gallen. She is a systems integration specialist. And so she's coming to talk to people about systems integration. Like, do you have systems in your business? What systems do you have? And then the way I'm going to tie it in is then how do you use those systems to scale? See, I love government contracting because it's a scalable business. So the same contract that's put out here in Miami, it looks the exact same in Tacoma, Washington. Like a contract, a 1442 is a 1442, a 1449 is a 1449, a SF-30 is a SF-30. It doesn't matter where you're doing it at. So once you learn how to put a system in place for your business and you know how to work for that client base, whether it be the VA, the Air Force, you can work for them all over the world. But if you don't have systems in place in your business, you're going to be stuck to right here. So that systems integration is important because that's what allowed me the ability to scale. So my businesses were ISO 9001 certified. So I had ISO systems. That system cost me over $30,000 to put in place. She's going to come help people put systems in place for free. Basic systems that then you can take and you can scale up. So that's a little bit about the Tampa Bootcamp. I'm excited for it.
Okay. So that, first of all, mind blown. Like, that is really setting out the steps in terms of, or I guess, you know how we talk about GSD, getting your shit together, getting shit done, basically. That is it right there. Having those systems and things in place makes your job so much easier. So that is amazing right there. So I'm excited to talk more about this about this boot camp. And I got some comments in the chat. You know, we're talking about great. Oh, the Nightway said they're a current and forever student of Kevin. He's 1,000% the truth. Wait, 10,000% the truth. Correction. And everything else, everything you're saying, you live by. So I love that. I love that. I love that. Listen, I really appreciate y'all tuning in to the podcast. Don't forget to like this episode and be sure to share it with at least 5 people that you know who have a business and are looking for ways to scale and grow their business. Government contracting is the way, and government cheese is going to help you get there. Okay. So Kevin, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I really appreciate you and the knowledge and everything that you've given us today. I have nothing but gratitude for you showing up for here today. So
thank you. I appreciate you allowing me to be on your platform. That means a lot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime. We can always spin a block on this one. I don't mind. No, so. All right, y'all. That's it. Again, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe, and we'll see you all. Oh, also, Government Cheese YouTube is in the chat as well. So don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe there as well. And we'll see y'all in the next episode of the Government Coins Podcast. All right. Peace.